And Peter Johnson joins us with the news that I think has taken a few people aback, Jimmy, that Premier Andrews today said basically the reason we're having the Grand Slam, the Australian Open this year, is because if we don't, we're at threat of losing it, which I think has taken a few people by surprise.
Yeah, there'll be some annoyed other sporting bodies that's the reason why it was, you know, going ahead, because they'd be saying, well, our sport could be lost, or we could lose a touring party or whatever it may be, not the health, you know, reason that's been thrown at us.
I'm not sure how we can lose it, though. But anyway, let's find out from someone who would know. Peter Johnson joins us on the line, a man who used to run men's tennis and was walking the halls of power at Tennis Australia. He will know more about this than most. He joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Jono. Were you taken aback by what the Premier had to say today?
Well, Joe, look, I know for sure that the Australian Open as a business has to do what it has to do to keep the continuity and keep going ahead. I'm sure that's the reason they're pressed on, but they don't actually, it's sort of, the way it works is it's an asset owned by Tennis Australia. So it'd be really Tennis Australia's to lose as such. Like, they could sell it to you know, wherever, you know, there's a lot of countries would love to have the Grand Slam event, but it's really not something that gets taken away from you by any governing body. I mean, the Grand Slams are a sort of an alliance of the four, you know, the French, Wimbledon and US Open, but they're independent entities that are owned. And, you know, I like, say, for example, Wimbledon wasn't played last year, but it didn't mean that Wimbledon was lost.
Yeah.
They just sat off and they're back on. So I think that's sort of not really correct. It's really in Tennis Australia's hands to decide the status of the Australian Open. Now, if the Australian Open over the next course of years continued to be a falling star, for example, and couldn't keep up the pace on prize money and all those sorts of things, well, then maybe the other slams and the tours would question its status. But, I mean, it's a glowing event in the on the global tennis stage. So you'd be a long way from ever getting the status taken off you, I can tell you that.
I think it probably points, though, to the heat that the government is actually now feeling. I mean, there is a fair swell of discontent or even anger, if you like, that the Tennis Australia is pursuing or continuing to go ahead with the Australian Open. And the issue of Tennis Sengren, a guy who's, you know, tested positive, but from all reports, not contagious, is still coming out to Australia with a second positive test, I think is inflaming what is a relatively volatile situation for the government to handle.
Well, it's always going to be tricky when it is against the grain of, you know, limiting the number of people coming into the country and even Australians coming back, and then suddenly there's the influx of the tennis players. I guess I've always said, and we've discussed this before, I think tennis has to do its best to try and stay on, and it's ultimately the government who's the ultimate arbiter in terms of can you do this and can you do that. And I've only been following the Tennis Sengren one through the media the last few hours, and clearly it had to go through a process. I mean, no one's let him on a plane without getting a tick from the health authorities here. So, but it's going to be constant management over the next period of time once the players hit town, the daily management of quarantine, etc. And it's going to be a road that I'm sure is going to have a lot of twists and turns. And I think every time it's going to be a lot about just how you manage what is a really tricky situation.
Pete, further to that, to borrow the AFL term, the optics, do you think the big-name tennis players understand, I guess, the uneasiness or nervousness of the general public with them coming out when they see early in the year the likes of Novak, Zverev and all that just partying up in Europe during the midst of COVID?
I do think so, Jimmy. I think they have lived through now almost, well, first of all, they had about 6 months where there was no play. So they had to live with that. And then in the resumption of play with the French, US Open, sorry, and then the French and a swag of ATP events and only a couple of WTA events, they've had to really live through the public or each country that they've played in, where there's been, in many cases, massive number of cases in that country and the controls that governments have put on in each country. So I think they're well and truly aware. I think there's an element of relief of players, like they are trusting of Australia and even getting on the plane. No, they've got to do the 2 weeks quarantine. I think they're happy enough to come to Australia because they know there's a fair bit to play for. There's more than one tournament. And also they're leaving, in most cases, countries that do have extensive cases of COVID. So overall, I think there's a general sort of almost feeling of looking forward to coming to Australia. And I think we'll see that when they arrive.
Just going back to the original issue, John, I've always been of the view that just thought it was on the money that Australia could lose the Australian Open and the Slam status to someone like China, who clearly they don't want our lobsters, they don't want our cherries, but I tell you what, they'd like our tennis tournament. I thought it was just a matter of, okay, you've got to stay politically sweet. But you're actually saying, well, that's absolutely nonsense. As long as we maintain the status by prize money, it's going nowhere. It begs a question why the Premier would think it's the case, because surely he'd be talking to Craig Tiley and the powers that be at Tennis Australia.
Well, the part that everyone in Australia understands is you've got to keep up your game or you probably become vulnerable. But yeah, the reality in simple terms is it's an asset that's owned by Tennis Australia. And look, I know I deal a lot with China and other countries, and boy, they, as you said, they do anything they could to try and get a slam, but they're kind of, they're not sitting on the shelf for sale because the Slams are performing well themselves. And I think it's only when it's not performing, just like any other asset, that any owner would look to unload it. So in that sense, it's always had its protection. But yeah, look, the Australian Open's done just an incredible job over the years to keep growing and keep maximising. Yep. And I think that's part of the positioning of Grand Slam Asia Pacific, isn't it? Like, you've got to grow the market that you're part of because Australia's small. And, you know, there've been the cleverness in trying to keep the Australian Open at a level of being a premier Grand Slam.
So just to tick off on the day's news on the court, and that, of course, is that Bernard Tomic got his way through, which he should do given the level of talent he's got, but he had to do it, and he has.
Yeah, and Jerry, look, I do really take my hat off to Bernie, that he what he did was he knew he had to, you know, we've talked about it's been difficult for all the players to have to go and to Dubai and Doha and know that also when they come back they have to quarantine. It's been a lot they've had to manage, and I think he's embraced it in a very positive way.
Yep.
And, you know, he's had he's played on some of the biggest stages in the world, but he's, in this case, he's had to pick up the balls in some cases, and he's played in front of no one, and he's found a way. He's played a couple of Aussies that actually, you know, you never really like to play an Aussie, probably when you've been the one who's the big guy, and those guys, it would be a kind of a bad loss in his eyes if he lost to them. So he's had to contend with a lot, and good on him for, you know, getting through. And I think he'd be pretty happy with himself to have got through.
Pete, further that, when he first came on the scene, he was projected out to be like a challenger for the, you know, the top 10, top 20. Now that we've seen enough of him, I know he's had his ups and downs, he's been in and out of the game and all sorts of stuff. Is that projection still right, or is he going to always peak out at a best of 30 or 40 in the world?
Well, Jimmy, I think he did have some pretty amazing years. He got to 17 in the world. His Davis Cup record always underrated, but it was 14-2. You know, pretty good at representing Australia in the years that he did. And couple of quarterfinals in slams. I think what he's really at now is identifying that he still wants to stay in the game. You know, I think he's demonstrated that by paying his dues, going to qualies. And I think he's just in a rebuild and probably trying to get as far as he can. You know, he always still has to work hard. He sort of openly admits that he sometimes doesn't work hard enough. And look, I think he's just probably trying to grind out the next stage of his career to really put the icing on it. He's 28 years old now. He certainly knows what's required, but I think that's where he's probably at a stage of trying to consolidate his regular spot in the main tour.
Well, I think the whole world's offered him some advice on how to do it and why he should do it. Seems to me like he's finally listened to his accountant. Jono, great to have you on board. Next time we speak, we want a winner of both men and women in the Australian Open.
Right, I'll work on that one, Drew. That's my homework.
Indeed it is. And you can't take no Iron Team because he's already been taken. There was Peter Johnson. He joined us for Club Mandalay, the must-play golf course in Melbourne's north. More sports day still ahead. And it's all for Wilson Homes. Chris Anstey to join us next.